the committee has had a chance to get together. Maybe the first thing we need to do on the agenda is to have us check our committee rules. Have you had a chance to review the rules?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Vice Chair.
Move the approval of the proposed rules.
The Vice Chair moves approval, adoption of the...
For the Information and Technology Committee that is set out on two-page documents noted as 1 through 14. I just want to know directly what I was talking about.
Right, right. Okay, have you all had an opportunity to review those rules? Any discussion? Any objection to the rules? The rules are hereby adopted. This is the... Pardon? Yes. Senator Nelson is excused and may be joining us a little bit later, so we'll proceed. I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome the members to the committee. Looking forward to some discussions we can have later on, talking about the direction for the committee and things we'd like to accomplish. I think a number of us had an opportunity to attend the conference in Portland recently on the emerging, what was that, Jim?
Economy.
The emerging new economy for Oregon. As I sat through that meeting, I kept thinking, my goodness, there's a lot of many things we ought to be doing. So I think it did challenge. I've asked Marjorie to go through the documentation that was put out and see items in there that would be important for us to look at as a committee. But we're very, very fortunate today to have with us people from the Internet Commission. Two of our members, Senators Courtney and Metzger, had the pleasure of serving on that commission, and so some of this will be a bit redundant. They probably know it all. Probably your influence is in here, I'm sure, throughout the whole document. But we did want the chair to join us today to brief us on that particular document. And we also have Jim Johnson. Dr. Vince Chia Petty. Am I pronouncing it correct? Chia Petty. Yes. Chia Petta. Chia Petta. I'm sorry. He had briefed me beforehand too. I double checked it and made a mistake. Who was Willamette University, the College of Law over there, and Jim Johnson from Intel, and Pat Allen from the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. In the back of the room, we have Tom Marmon, who has been very involved in this whole process, working as the executive director, I believe is the official title for the commission. This time, Dr. Chia Petta, I'd like to just turn it over to you and let you brief our committee on what happened in the your commission. Senator Nelson has now joined us.
Fair enough. I'd like to thank you all for inviting us. It's nice to be able to actually talk to somebody about all of the things we wrote and have an audience for that. I understand what you asked for was an informational overview, so we'll just be going at a fairly high level. Obviously, if there are other questions, we are happy to address them now or to take care of them in whatever ordinary course.
And I might comment that we did, for this first meeting today, because we had to sort of find a niche where we could find time, and so we've established from 1 to 2. And obviously, there'll be more going on in this area, and we hope that you will be able to join us again at some point during the time. But
fair enough. Thanks
for a good
overview
today. Okay.
What we did, just for your information, is we divided up the presentation a little bit, so you'll be hearing from me first, and then Jim Johnson will be talking to you a little about some aspects of the report,
yes,
and then Pat Allen about some of the other aspects.
Good.
Of the report.
And would you please introduce yourself for the record?
No, sorry. My name is Vince Chiapetta. I'm a professor over at Willamette University College of Law. I'm the ex-chair of the ex-Oregon Internet Commission, which sunset December 31st of last year. I will start out and then hand the baton over, and then it'll come back to me to close up. And as you mentioned, it is a little bit of old home week. I'm Senator Courtney and Senator Metzger. We're both very involved in the commission. We're very privileged to have their participation. So to the extent we either say something that doesn't sound quite right or don't say something that you thought was important, please feel free to throw it in there. I'm going to assume you all know what the Oregon Internet Commission was. It was basically set up last year to look at promoting and continuing the growth of Internet commerce in Oregon to the benefit of Oregon's citizens, business, and government. The basic message about what we found is pretty simple. Internet commerce is a good opportunity to help build a sustainable sustainable economy in Oregon. Oregon's well positioned to take advantage of that opportunity, but the competition's out and running and it's pretty intense, which means that this activity is about making some quick decisions and commitments where you can read the word investment, particularly in education, particularly in promoting broadband infrastructure, first-class electronic government, and a hospitable business and legal environment. Just a couple of highlights before we get into the actual report. First is that very clearly internet commerce should not be understood to mean just the dot-com economy. Notwithstanding the swoon in market caps for a lot of those, we interpreted internet or electronic commerce as meaning as a much more profound effect that the internet and electronic activity has had on business in general. And so that there's a lot of business-to-business among what electronic commerce or internet commerce, which most people would have viewed originally as being traditional businesses, which have moved into this direction. So people should very definitely keep in mind the breadth of the subject that we're talking about. Those kinds of changes we think are going to continue to endure. They're having a profound effect on the way business is done in the United States as well as in the world. And the second, as I mentioned, is a very distinct opportunity. Oregon has some needs to find some ways to fill in on parts of the economy that are having or have had some difficulties, and this looks like a way to deal with that. It's a clean industry, creates high-paying jobs. As I mentioned, we're, I think, in a pretty good position to capitalize on it. It also fits pretty well into a difficult, for lack of a better word, geography, where you don't have simple, huge concentrations, but as we do here in Oregon, have a very spread out population and not necessarily all in urban areas. And the third is really this idea that the competitive landscape is extremely tough. To foster internet commerce, but there's a special set of requirements for those businesses. Others have noticed that. California is already out there. Of course, they've got some congestion problems as well as some electricity problems right now, but other states like Virginia, Utah, Colorado are very clearly out in front on this issue. So the one thing I think to keep in mind as you listen to us is that there's a need to decide whether we want to do this and decide quickly. The other thing is that doing it in a half-hearted way is going to leave us behind the people that are doing this in a sort of full-bore, wholehearted way. The last thing I'd mention is that there is a big caveat here. Obviously, we understood, and it's actually in the report, and I'll talk about that in a little bit, that there are other demands on Oregon's resources. One of the things to remember, of course, is in deciding whether the return on this investment is worth it, there ought to be other alternatives that are better than this one. And a lot of what we found is that in terms of economic development, this one's a pretty darn good one. So what we proposed, I hope you all have copies of the report, should look like this in front of you. We'll use it as a vehicle, I think, to talk about the recommendations. If you turn actually to page one, past all of the introductions, it's number page one, you'll see at the top it says introduction and then commission's recommendations. As a general overview, the recommendations section at the bottom there of the left-hand column over to the top of the right-hand, you can see that it really came in three parts. The first part was a set of very specific actions, and we'll talk about those in a little bit more detail, but is in deference to the time, not necessarily a lot. The second, however, was some thoughts about the way to present what we do with our specific actions, and most particularly how to present Oregon, and I'll talk about that a little bit at the end of the session, and as well some, I think, very critical points about implementation of the entire program. And again, I'll mention those as well toward the end of the discussion here. With regard to the specific actions, we looked at the as broad a range as we, with the help of quite a number of people, and we got a fair amount of public input as well as expert input, looked at the massive issues, organized them basically into the four groups that you see if you were to look over onto pages two and three in the way that we split up our recommendations. And our recommendations obviously follow that approach. The other thing to mention about the recommendations is the word priority was intentional. We tried to take all of these recommendations and prioritize them, recognizing competition for resources. And so as a consequence, if you were to ask us which should we do first, we've tried to tell you that. And they're prioritized as well within the large headings because we understood that there might be some need to make some decisions. Very quickly, quickly with regard to the four areas that are listed here and then turn it over to Jim and Pat for a while. Education was very clearly, I think, a consensus item on the commission, absolutely critical path. Without the talent, it's a non-starter for the businesses. Without the skills, it's a non-starter for Oregonians getting to participate in this kind of new economy. And so that it's right there at the top. Telecommunications infrastructure, writ large, as Pat will tell you more about, obviously very critical as well to this kind of an economy. E-government comes in two pieces, and was, I think, probably the most interesting thing that I learned out of this. It's both a message and a vehicle for helping out with regard to the new economy, so it goes well beyond simply facilitating a more efficient and productive government, and in fact carries messages with it with regard to Oregon's commitment to the internet economy, as well as providing a training ground and access for Oregon citizens to learn about it. And then the last, we combined really the business and legal infrastructure, which are really facilitating devices, both with regard to the business environment and the legal environment in which these businesses operate. So with that said, that's, I think, really a pretty fair overview of what we did. If you're interested, at the back of the report, and the way the report is structured is after the introductory section are each of the subcommittee reports, which give you much more detail on the different priority groupings and recommendations in the introductory pages. So that, just for example, if you were to look at page 5, you'll see the start of the Education and Workforce Subcommittee report in the overall report. And what that does is outlines more detail about the education activities. And the same is true for each of the divisions. At the very end of the report, we also, after the last report, starting on page 29, we tried to provide some general background information about what other states are doing, common themes that we found about what other states are doing, and then on page 33 and 34, a description of the process we used to come to our recommendations and our conclusions. So that's the basic structure of the report, and rather than getting the details of those other things, I'll leave them to you to read and consider. So with that said, Jim, if I could turn it over to you, maybe we could talk a little bit about the education side of this stuff.
Again, this is Jim Johnson, and what I had the privilege of really helping participate in the committee was focused on education and workforce development. And as was mentioned, we have prioritized everything, so priority one, and then priority one of priority one is all about educating our workforce. So it was actually quite amazing. The very first day of the Internet Commission, we all kind of just, did some straw man, straw woman kinds of where are we, and education and workforce issues emerged right away. And so it was really never a question in the committee about where we wanted to focus. We obviously needed a complete package, but we knew right away that that was the number one thing that we needed to deliver on. I have a common theme in some of my talks, and I talk about my three P's, people, pipes, and piles of money. And as you can see, priority one and priority two out of the Internet Commission were, people and pipes. So I think it's quite consistent. And one could argue that it takes piles of money to do this, so we actually have all three of the P's. So as you can see, because what we realized in the 21st century economy is that it is about people and about the intellectual property that's developed in the mind. And many of you may have heard, maybe on the way in today, that Motorola announced a layoff of 1,500 people, or was it 2,500 people? I think it was 2,500 people, out of a plant in Illinois that employed 5,000 people. And it turns out that of the 2,500 that stayed, they were the engineers, they were the marketing people, they were the sales people, they were the support people, the people that had what I'll call the value add on their education. The people that were let go were the manufacturing people, and that will now probably be done, in Mexico or in the Far East. So I think that that's, an absolute just wave that's, has hit us in the past. And I think with this round of kind of the stuttering of the economy, the companies always go to look to where can we maximize our profits, and they're going to throw for more efficiency in the manufacturing sector, unless it's a real high value add manufacturing sector like semiconductor plants, they're going to go overseas. And so I think Oregon is particularly vulnerable to that if we choose not to invest in those higher paying jobs and in creating the workforce that will allow that. Companies go where the people are, where the highly trained workforce is. It's a very mobile industry. I think Intel now probably has 25 different sites here in the United States. And, you know, where they can find good people, they'll set up a site. The overhead associated with a new site isn't anywhere near the cost of not being able to get the employees' capabilities. So that's a critical element. And you look at what when Intel buys companies. We just announced we bought another one in Salt Lake City, $750 million or so. What you'll find is a lot of times the majority of the money we pay or the value we get out of that investment is the individuals, the capabilities of those engineers, the marketing people, the salespeople. So we feel that, you know, Oregon has to make a decision. Does it want to participate in the 21st century economy? Do we want to have the $30,000 a year jobs, or do we want to have the $60,000, $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 a year jobs? And correspondingly, do we want the revenue that those jobs would then generate in terms of tax revenue into the state system? You know, one of the challenges we're faced right now in this economic cycle is we didn't have as much money, or we're not having as much money as we'd like to make some future investments. And that's because we haven't had the job growth here that we've needed.
Jim, I believe I heard you comment one time as you're talking about hiring 600 new engineers, and you were talking about what that would bring into the economy. Those figures were very impressive. Do you happen to have those on top of your
head? Well, I think the figure, if you're talking about the new investment, is basically if we just took the high-tech sector in Oregon and if they were paid the same amount that they were paid in Washington State, that would bring in $1 billion of incremental revenue into each biennium. Just that. Now, that's a huge set of numbers, and I know that's somewhat fictitious because we're paid what we're paid and they're paid what they're paid. But it shows the magnitude of that if we could, you know, if we grew a Qualcomm-like company, you know, out of some great idea that emerged out of one of our universities, it could have that kind of impact on our economy. So specifically what we've said is there's really, again, in that priority one, you know, and then the number one priority under that, excuse me, is we say fully fund the IT, engineering, and computer science cells in the university system. Excuse me. You know, as you know, the new model that was passed last year basically funded across the board on all university cells about 82% of peers. So they went out and did benchmarking and said, you know, how much does it cost to educate, you know, an engineer at Berkeley? How much does it cost to educate an engineer at Arizona? And they benchmark that against what we are going to invest. And we said, well, we can do it better, smarter, cheaper. We'll give you 82% or 82 to 88, depending on how you look at the numbers. Go for it. And we said that's fine, but that's one of those things where, you know, in business you can lose a little on every sale, but make it up in volume. Well, you know, that's kind of a hard scenario to beat. And you can expect some improved efficiencies, but, you know, at some point, if you keep lowering that sell value, you're going to drive towards mediocrity, not drive towards greatness. And, you know, the current budget as is being proposed, you know, drives that sell value down even more. There are some targeted dollars in it, $20 million for engineering programs, which I'm very grateful for. But if you drive the sell value down at the same time you're funding specific programs, you're driving mediocrity into the entire university system while you're trying to get excellence out of a particular department. And it's hard to get freshmen and sophomore to go through a mediocre system and all of a sudden become great when they become juniors and seniors. It doesn't quite work that way. So it's a difficult kind of trade-off. So, and we include in that both the community college system. It's also very critical. That feeds a lot of the technical fields. And it is the easiest, most affordable way for a lot of people to participate. So the next thing we said is we need to double the number of engineers. You know, very, very specifically, we need more engineers, and again, not just to help the high-tech sector, but to help every sector. Because, again, supply chain management is a reality, and those, you know, if you're selling furniture, you're selling wood, you know, you've got vendors and you're selling to someone, and chances are those people have computer systems to drive their costs down, and your computer systems have to talk to their computer systems, so we need to have enough technical people around the state to help transform every business around the state into the 21st century economy.
Jim, when you talk about engineering, are you defining that in mechanical, chemical, or are you taking engineering in total, or just the technology, computer engineering?
Well, I actually look at it very broadly, and I use the term engineering quite loosely to mean, you know, IT professionals and, you know, engineers, computer scientists. If you look at, you know, mechanical engineering. A lot of, you know, if you go into a sawmill and you say, okay, we want this sawmill to become a world-class sawmill, you've got to have very strong computer science capabilities, you've got to have very strong mechanical engineering capabilities, and these mechanical engineers are no longer mechanical engineers of the past where it's, you know, all gears and stuff. They're thinking about, okay, how everything is computer-driven, so how do I start designing things that allow that to happen? So it really takes, you know, I'll call it smart infrastructure, maybe is a better way of doing it, is no matter what is being built, it's got to be built, you know, using computer technology in the first place, and then take advantage of computer technology to make it more efficient in and of itself. So I think where you need to focus it, so where's the majority of that money need to go? It needs to go into electrical engineering, it needs to go into computer science, it needs to, you know, go into the IT field. But I also think we need to be making some investment in those others to make sure that they're modernizing, keeping up with their tools, and making sure they're delivering state-of-the-art capabilities.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With the budget that's been proposed, are we going to answer your vision as you came through with this commission? Are we getting close?
No.
And can we do then?
Well, I everything is solved with money, though I think we're going to have to get a little more creative than that. But we need to fully fund them. You know, if I had an ideal world, we would fully fund the South for engineering and those related fields. We would dedicate $30 million to double the number of engineers by 2005, and we would start a significant investment to create a Tier 1 institution in peer improvement, and I support the OUS, or the Board of Higher Education's plan of investing $10.6 million as a down payment on making that a reality. In both those cases, the doubling and the Tier 1, those are required matching dollars from industry. Industry is very committed to this and knows that it needs to participate with its dollars and its time. But I do believe that it's going to take a lot more creativity because, you know, looking at the budget numbers, we're not where we need to be, and we're going to have to get better, faster. And I think this comes down to the fundamental issue about, are we going to do this or are we not going to do this? Because if we just say, oh, great, he asked for 40 and maybe the cells or another, I don't know what it costs to fully fund to right now given the new model. You know, if it's going to take $150 million, we'll give you 10, go for it. You might as well take the 10 and give it to someone else. Because I'd like to spend it on engineering and the university system, but it's not going to give you any kind of return on that investment. You know, when you look at what other states are doing, just reading about what Washington is doing, right? And they're thinking about dedicating $50 million for a brand new Washington Institute of Technology, right? It isn't good enough that they already have a top 30 institution up there. They want another one. And so, you know, with those kinds of investments, you hear about California investing $1 billion in four strategic areas. On top of their already significant investment in the university system, you realize that, you know, we've got a big hill to climb. And even though those are big numbers, and one might say, well, then, gosh, we can never win, I don't agree with that. We don't have to invest those kinds of dollars. We have a community that is willing to support this. But, again, the state has to take a leadership position and then put challenges out there that says, we'll do some of the funding, but then you need to go out institutions and match this money at 2-to-1, 3-to-1, whatever it's going to take. And, you know, industry, we expect you to stand up here and give us money and your time. And we expect some. So I think putting up a scenario in which the state says, this is important, we put the seed money in, but we also expect matching, we expect other people to participate in it, is a wonderful environment, because that's what it's going to take for a community our size to be competitive in a global world. And we can do it. I absolutely am convinced we can do it. But what's happening is no one's willing to stand up and put the first dollar in because they're so concerned that the state's going to back away. And if the state backs away, then everything kind of implodes. But I've talked to foundations. I think they want to play a role in this. I've talked to many individuals who have moved here over the years, who now have their kids, and some of them have gone to Oregon schools, some not, but they believe in Oregon. They want to participate in this, and I know industry wants to participate in this. But we've got to get our act together. And, again, what the commission has put together, I believe, is a very, very good framework to begin to pull this thing forward.
Hey, gentlemen, I got a bill I got to go testify on. They scheduled one of my bills in the state fair at the very time we're doing this. I feel bad, Mr. Chair, because I was on the Internet Commission. Right. I wanted to be here in your first meeting. I hope to get back. I'll talk quickly, get back. So
okay.
Forgive me.
Well,
I hope you.
I don't think there's any question. You will talk rapidly.
Thank you so much.
I'll protect it here.
Okay. So again, priority one is we've got to really focus on our university system. And again, this isn't academic for academic's sake. This is about economic development. I mean, I enjoy university life and all that kind of stuff. Maybe I did many years ago. But that's not why I'm here. I'm here because I think the state of Oregon can have a very strong economy in the 21st century, but we have to make this fundamental investment. And we are at a very pivotal point. We will decide, I think, during this session right here, whether Oregon will be a prosperous 21st century economy or not. So it doesn't stop at the university level. We've got to do other investments. Again, that's priority one within that. The next thing is, you know, we've got to make sure that we've got enough students. Many of you, at least, who saw the Oregonian article, I think it was a week ago, you know, had a big article on, you know, our kids aren't emerging out of our high school systems with as much interest in math and science and engineering as the rest of the nation. I thought Ted, the author, maybe overblew it a little. I mean, the deltas were small in terms of the norms. I mean, we were below the norms consistently, but it wasn't like our kids were zero and none of them were interested in this stuff. I think we have a lot of our young kids are very interested in this. But we do need to put more energy into encouraging that more of our young people take an interest in math and science. And so we set out a goal to double the number of kids that are coming out of our high school systems that are interested in math and science and computer-related topics. Again, in the $30 million proposal that the ETIC has put forth on the 2X plan, there's $1 million of that $30 million is focused on what we call pre-college, and it's investing in programs like Smart Saturday Academy, things that mentoring programs that really go out and really focus a lot on minority students and young girls. Again, we've discovered that girls going into middle school love math and science, and they have a high rate of decay coming out of middle school, and that we need to put a lot of energy there, that somehow that's where they make their decisions. So we need to put energy there, also on the high school level, but really in the middle school level for underrepresented minorities and young girls.
Jim, I guess I can't resist getting my pitch in on this particular concern I've always had, and I think you may have heard me comment about it before. One of the big problems you have is that the way math is taught, even at the university level, you have so many people afraid of math, and then in our teacher training programs, we compound that fear, just the way it's taught, and these people are going to go out and teach math at the elementary level, and they don't want to teach it, they're assigned to teach it, and they don't put the enthusiasm. The reason I can say that is because I taught fifth grade and I taught math, and that's a tragedy when I think about it. So I'm trying to think that, you know, we really need to do something to beat up the elementary part through, because if you don't do that, you don't set that groundwork, and you scare people from math. So I just got my pitch in and let you go on.
Mr. Chair, I think your point is very valid. We did address that issue, and maybe Mr. Johnson would talk about that. We talked about best practices in math and science, that there are ways to make that exciting. Algebra 1 is the indicator. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that, because I think that directs to what the chair was saying in terms of that there is a methodology here maybe to help achieve that.
Sure. Well, actually, we had, I forgot the individual's name, but someone from the University of California State Schools come up and talked about their best known methods of encouraging minorities and young girls. And, you know, those are the kinds of programs we could implement. They're not really expensive. I mean, they talk a lot about counseling. It's probably one of the biggest issues that they have faced, at least in California, was they found a lot of the counselors were also kind of afraid of math and afraid of all this kind of stuff. And so they tended to guide people away from those kinds of topics. And, you know, someone has commented to me, I don't know if it was a joke or not, but it was kind of like, you know, we need to get an engineering island type show where somehow we, you know, glamorize.
To survive.
You know, yeah, to survive. I don't know. So they can have the geeks survive. I don't know.
That's a joke,
isn't it? Yeah. I think that you're, I mean, in a way, it's a, there, you know, Gilbert seems to be the icon of the engineer in the public's eye, and that's really not the icon I would have chosen, but it's the one that's out there. So we do have clearly we have an image issue, but again, I found that when you talk to a young person who really loves engineering, loves solving problems, you know, loves working with their hands, loves creating things. There is something about that that you can't stop it. Once that seed is planted, it doesn't take a lot of money. I'd love every school to have a brand new Intel computer on every desk, but it doesn't take that. It really takes is getting the imagination of our young children excited, and from there they will grow. And again,
should be something else that I believe does have to be excused.
On board.
Okay.
I got the message.
We're very pleased. This is the only committee. Senator Nelson is a majority leader and doesn't generally serve on committees, but this is an area of interest, and we realize he's going to have to leave every now and then from it. But we got he's interested enough to at least be a member of the committee whenever he can.
So those are that's really I'll call it the quick summary of the education and workforce portion of this.
Fair enough. Pat Allen talked to you a little bit about business infrastructure, including telecommunications and government. Before he starts, I'd like to both thank him, but also the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department and the work on the commission. I mean, they were just terrific supporters and a tremendous help, and Pat in particular. So, Pat.
Thank you. My name is Patrick Allen. I'm the Economic and Community Development Department's regional officer serving Clackamas and Hood River counties, and I was the department's representative on the commission. My job today is to kind of fly low and fast over three of the areas in our report: the telecommunications infrastructure, electronic government, and business infrastructure portions. You'll find summarized on pages 2 and 3. I'm not going to try to hit every single thing that's in there. I'll just kind of pull out a couple of what I think are key recommendations, key highlights. First, in terms of telecommunications infrastructure, quoting you briefly from the report, our recommendation is simply that the state should aggressively promote the existence, maintenance, and constant updating of generally accessible, route-diverse, statewide, reliable broadband telecommunication services, which are essential to e-business. There's a lot of stuff wrapped up in that sentence, and I want to just briefly talk a little bit about what is in that sentence and a little bit about what is not in that sentence. What is not in that sentence is any sort of a call that the state needs to own, build, operate, maintain stuff. That recommendation is not a call for state construction of some kind of a state communications network. Really, the operative verb in there is promote. We're recommending that the state take a leadership role in identifying as a matter of public policy that the existence of statewide route-diverse telecommunications infrastructure is critical, and that it's an area that the private sector by itself, particularly to rural parts of the state, but even in certain urban parts of the state, won't simply provide, that there needs to be some work done to identify public-private partnerships, identify gaps, potential fillers of those gaps, and those kinds of things. And we're calling for that set of pieces of work to be done. In the area of electronic government, I think you can summarize the recommendations we have there real briefly as do as much as possible via the Internet as well as possible and as legally as possible. The Internet is an area where we can provide less expensively, more efficiently, and more effectively a lot of information and a lot of direct service to the public. We need to do that in a way that is high quality, highly secure, but also is able to serve as a model for how other organizations and entities can deliver products and services and information over the Internet. And the middle recommendation there, number 2 at the bottom of page 2 about enacting new laws, there's a fair amount of legislative action that is required to be able to do that. An example, it would be something you might not tend to think of automatically, which is how our public records laws impact the privacy of financial information if you conduct a financial transaction over the Internet. If, for example, renew your driver's license over the Internet. There are substantial areas that are publicly disclosable that would prevent the state today from putting a privacy statement that's common to most e-commerce sites on its website. And there is legislation that's been drafted on that and a number of other areas at the request of the Department of Administrative Services to deal with those issues. Finally, in business and legal infrastructure, there are a number of recommendations dealing specifically with business infrastructure. I'd like to touch on one of them, which is creation of an e-commerce enterprise zone program, which would in some ways use something like the existing Enterprise Zone program, which is geared toward the capital investments of manufacturers, to provide a tax favored treatment for those kinds of business investments necessary for e-commerce. Unlike the existing Enterprise Zone program, which focused directly on the investments made by the company that's making whatever the product is, the intent here would be something that is broader, that deals not only with the company that's engaged in e-commerce, but with the necessary infrastructure supplier, which is a private sector company that runs the pipe, you know, from the loop or the point of presence to the actual door. And in terms of e-commerce businesses, it means not only those companies that are engaged in the actual marketing and order taking and those kinds of things, but also the fulfillment, which actually is in many respects a greater potential creator of jobs and capital investment. Our initial recommendation, as you'll find in the detailed portion of the Business Infrastructure Committee report, looks at the actual tax favor being a break on capital gains taxes of the capital invested to do that e-commerce. We also, though, outline a couple of other possibilities that deal with other types of tax credit treatment that are existing in the current Enterprise Zone program.
Are those spelled out in here?
Yes. The question has asked me to find that quickly.
Where is that? So we can.
If you look on page 14, number 1.
Okay.
That gets into some number 1, 2, and 3 actually are three different approaches to that issue. As we outlined it, you can effectively look at a break on capital gains taxes of the required capital investment. You could look at some kind of a tax credit program, much like the research and development program, or you could look at a property tax treatment.
Yes, Senator. Excuse me. Put it down so I'd have it.
Just for Senator Metzger's benefit, Senator Atkins' benefit, you might want to know the reference to legislation that's been pre-session filed. That was filed, as you know, through your Supreme Committee, the Joint Information Technology Committee, which you co-chaired with.
The audits, which one?
It wasn't the audits.
Oh, it was the other one, okay.
It's Information and Technology.
Well, I chair so many, it's hard to keep track of. Go ahead.
You and Representative Jim Hill. The bills are pre-session filed, particularly the e-government references, and the chair of this committee chose, in cahoots with Representative Hill, to start them in the House. So I assume that when they get through with the House, and they will be successful there, they will end up over here, right in this little committee, right? Is that correct?
They come right here.
Right here. And they will get here from the House. They will make it over. So I just wanted Senator Metzger to know, Senator Atkinson, the measures that you've referred to, that's how we handled this. They didn't choose to start them on our side. I don't know why, but they didn't choose to do that. And so I just wanted to make sure that you understand that I know that you did that, and I'm waiting for them to come to us.
Well, you watch it carefully, will you?
Yeah, sure.
We do have those coming over here, and I'm sure they'll get through the House. Look like they're pretty good measures.
With that, I'll turn it quickly back to Vince Giappetta.
I just made a quick assertion. Again, back on priority two, I mentioned where industry will go where people are. The industry will go where people are and the pipes. So for rural Oregon to participate in the 21st century, even if Eastern became a top-rated engineering school in the nation, if it doesn't have great connectivity in the area, businesses aren't going to set up there. And same with Southern or any part of the state. So this notion that knowing this is really critical. As an example, I'm not aware that the state even knows where these fibers are laid, and what parts of the state are well covered and what part of the states are not. And again, where the committee is not suggesting the state own this, the state should be aware of it. And they should know what parts of the state are well covered and don't need a lot of help, and what states aren't covered very well and need some help. And again, the form of that help, we got to figure it out. But I think that's a very, very important element for economic development across the entire state. So you know, I think for the first time I saw a map of downtown Portland, where someone finally showed me where the fiber was being laid in what streets. And that was the first map I've seen anywhere in the state that could communicate where those lines are. And that was just for a, you know, a 30-square-block area.
Senator, according to Chair, Mr. Johnson, I thought 622 last session, there was all kinds of, you could very well be right. I thought 622, I wish Senator Nelson was here, that we saw, at least Eastern Oregon, we had a feel for what was going on out there, but maybe not. I don't know.
That's great. Just because I haven't seen it doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Well, Mr. Chair, actually, you're both right. In that, we have identified through the help of, you know, the private companies who care to share that information, you know, where are there, where major fiber is. A lot of it goes right through here, and we got major fiber going through Coos Bay, but there's no off ramps for it. Mm-hmm. But because of, you know, priority of some company, we don't know where it all is. I mean, but so we're kind of partially there. But I think Mr. Johnson is right that if we're going to form policy, especially based on that, you know, the more knowledge, the better.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Did you have the answer to that?
Partly, yeah. And actually,
you want to hear the answer, get the answer, or do you want to?
Actually, Senator Metzger pretty well got it, was that through the Senate Bill 622 process, we have learned a vast amount more about that map than we knew 12 or 18 months ago. There is a level of detail in the map that Jim Johnson refers to in an area like Portland. It's a vastly different scale of detail. But in terms of the basic backbone lines and those kinds of things, and where the loops are and where there are gaps in loops and things like that, we have a pretty good handle on that through the Senate Bill 622 process.
Senator Atkinson.
Just a brief comment, and I believe it was a line from that I've pirated from the New Technology, New Economy Workshop, and I think it was yours, the difference between there previously being a rural Oregon, rural-urban split in Oregon, now being those who have access to technology and high-speed data transfer and or higher education and those who do not. And I'll give you a real practical example. I gave this to a speech a couple of weeks ago in Portland regarding my own company, a company that I run at 28.8. Give me a break. And everyone here is running at T1. I can't compete. So I now take my stuff elsewhere. I take my company elsewhere, and I look for clients elsewhere. It's just the function of business. You have to go where you can make money, where you can live. And I think we have all these. There is absolutely zero leveling of the playing field in rural Oregon. You'll have a place like Ashland that has a great fiber network, and then you'll go to where I live, about 15 miles away, at 28.8 on a good day. Or the Speaker of the House, who runs at 16, who has to drive to the top of a hill to use his cell phone to call me. I mean, there's huge discrepancies town to town. We're not talking region. We're talking town to town within Oregon. And if this is really a priority, we can't just make blatant statements out there that we're going to fix all. I mean, it's literally block to block to block to block of who can go fast and where can you grow companies. The Senate district that I now represent has a big chunk of it that could really grow from having a bigger pipe. So does Senator Meserly in Coos Bay, as you reference. Here's where the pipe comes to offshore through his district, but nobody can use it. These are discrepancies. I mean, if we're really serious about economic development and we're really serious about having people participate in higher education, this is one vehicle, but you have to do it. Look at how many statewide MBA programs there are in the Pacific Northwest. University of Washington has an executive MBA program in Portland. Portland State University has an executive MBA program in Bend and in Ashland and all these various places. How do you get people access if they can't even go at what is changing, but what used to be a fast speed 4 years ago, and you can't get rural Oregon even to that speed. So I think one thing I would be interested in doing, I know this is our first hearing, but I would like to know why is it taking so long. I did receive a piece of information that in 2 years from now I'll be able to go at I think 256. Well, I can't wait 2 years. So, I mean, I'd be curious to know where not only where we are, but how fast we're going. Just a comment. Thank you for that line, whoever said that. That was.
Other questions?
No, I'm here. Actually, just to throw in my own two cents on that, the one thing that we heard a lot about in the field hearings is not just connectivity, but also route diversity. There's some huge problems, for example, in eastern Oregon of having only one pipe. You're not going to build a company there. If that pipe goes down, you're out of business. So in thinking about this problem, it's more than just the transmission speeds themselves, but also the alternative routes that you've got. So, again, very critical point. We saved, obviously, the best for last, legal infrastructure, the reason everybody, of course, came to hear. I would focus you on page 3 on priority 4, numbers 1 and number 5, and probably the easiest way to talk about this is that we split things into what we shouldn't do and what we might productively address. And the shouldn't do, I think, is almost as important as the things we could do. The basic business laws we've got are very good. The fraud, scam, regulatory kinds of laws apply relatively well to the Internet. Privacy is obviously a huge issue, but there are a lot of people, most notably a bunch of people in Washington, D.C., that are very interested in this. And there's actually a downside to Oregon acting in some of these areas by creating commercial confusion and uncertainty, where we end up with special laws, and it's not sure whether they're supplemental to, whether they're preempted by. So that there are a number of areas that, while they're important to the Internet economy, I think may be best left, at least at this point, and we recommended a wait-and-see attitude on a fair number of them, most notably these ideas of privacy, fraud, scam, and ride with what we've got with maybe some extra assistance, the Attorney General enforcement. On the areas in legal infrastructure we can be productive do have to do with predictability and certainty, excuse me, and they're under priority 4, number 1, and they have to do with our basic commercial laws. And there are two fundamental issues. One is just the straightforward question of enforceability of electronic contracting. And there is federal legislation, and all of this is detailed in the actual legal infrastructure report. We actually provided some basic background. There's some federal legislation about enforceability that creates a problem with our existing electronic signature laws as well as our digital signature laws, and it also creates a fairly imperative need to act with regard to what else we might want to do as we're permitted to do under the federal e-sign legislation. And most particularly, we ought to take the commission recommended we take a very strong and quick look at UETA, which is the Uniform Electronic Transactions Act, as a way of making sure that Oregon has done the best it can to ensure certainty and predictability with regard to just enforceability of online contracting. Related to that, and I ought to at least mention in passing, is the issue of digital signatures, which goes beyond the question of enforceability, but to certainty and the ability to identify who it was that issued the electronic signature. So the first question relates to being able to tell whether you have a contract. The second is making sure you really understand who it is with. And the digital signatures is a way to do that. And again, there's some information in the report about exactly what those are. But I know there's some legislation both on the government side, and I think there's likely to be some more with regard to the commercial side with setting up a system which gives you predictability in who the signature is, and that's the digital signature as opposed to simply the electronic signature.
A couple of these things came up yesterday. Senator Courtney and I serve on the Judiciary Committee.
Yes,
Senator Metzger, all three of us, and with the universal
UCC
Article 9, we were dealing with some of those things yesterday too. So
absolutely, it's a fairly pervasive issue, mm-hmm. in an online business, and the question is really, how does it work in that kind of an electronic environment? And as I said, I think that the critical issue is to make sure that you've got the certainty and predictability. And so that you've really got to, I think, pay a lot of attention to whether or not you're developing conflicts within existing law and whether it's clear and people are going to understand what's happening. The second issue really has to do more with the terms of online contracting, and it's more controversial, I think. And again, we spent some time talking about it in the report here, and most particularly I'm referring to UCITA, which is the Uniform Computer Information Transactions Act. The underlying issue there, though, should not get confused, I think, with the discussions about UCITA itself. There is that same need in the business environment to be able to predict what the outcomes are going to be with regard to the terms that are in one's contract. But then as a second issue, and a very important one, which have to do with the policy decisions you make about how those terms can actually get selected. And so, again, we've recommended that Oregon ought to look very soon and very carefully at what kind of rules we would like to have about that, again, with the eye primarily on this question of certainty and predictability, secondarily then, of course, on UCITA itself and what is that a viable solution? Are there other alternative solutions? So that within the commercial law environment themselves, I think that there's two issues they ought to be dealt with very separately. One is the predictability of enforcement, which has to do with signatures. The second is the predictability of the terms themselves, which has to do with UCITA and the actual contracting process itself. But again, I think some time can be spent very predictably there, because one of the things that Internet commerce is going to demand is the certainty and predictability in this area. And it's one of the places, obviously, that doesn't have a lot of investment, direct investment required, other than the generation of the laws themselves. So those really, I think, summarize at a fairly high level the various specific recommendations we made. I want to close with just a couple of last thoughts. I mentioned that we talked about both message and implementation. I think the message portion, which is actually the Oregon Advantage Report, which is in toward the back of the Good Commission Report starting on page 25, really talks about a related but distinct issue, which is that we might build all of this in Oregon and they still won't come. And we've got both a problem with maybe some residual views about what Oregon's image is. We've also are playing a little bit of catch up with some other states that are out ahead on this, and that I think there's a need to focus on the message itself about Oregon and what it is. Beyond being a fabulous place to live, it's got very talented and creative people. They work hard and they play hard, that we do have and are creating the things that these kinds of businesses need. And in particular, I'd focus you on the recommendations on pages 25 through 27, which talk about a coordinated effort through an Oregon branding officer, as well as an outreach program to certain constituencies that are important. So I think message may be just as important as content here, just because of where we're starting the game in Oregon. The second piece has to do with implementation itself, and aside from the normal things about accountability and making sure that we've got ways to measure, in fact, what we're doing, I'd add the last piece, which is that this business of the new economy is an ongoing affair. What we've given or tried to give is a snapshot of what we think we need to do today under today's conditions. And it's going to change tomorrow, and it'll change the next day. So another, I think, very vital thing to do is to set up a process of some kind which monitors how the environment itself is changing, so that we keep moving our actions in line with the target that we're aiming at. So while these things may get us into the forefront of Internet or electronic or new economy kinds of environments, those are going to keep evolving, and we've got to keep our eye on it. And so that the last recommendation we really made is to make sure that we have some kind of process in place to continue to capture change itself. So that really, I think, concludes what we have to say. As I said, there are a lot of people involved in this, and they're listed in the front, and our thanks obviously go to those. If I were going to leave you with one message, I think I'd second what Jim said earlier about the education. I think this is a critical turning point, and the opportunities there, we're poised to take it. There's some tough decisions to make, but I think they need to be addressed and they need to be made. So thank you very much.
Last minute questions for them? Well, Jim and Vince and Pat, thank you very much for being with us today. And I have a feeling we'll probably want to talk to you again, and feel free to bring ideas to this committee at any time. I don't think it's going to be a committee that's going to deal with a lot of bills, but I think we're going to have an opportunity to be thinking about some things and maybe generating some ideas from the committee here too. So looking forward to that. So keep in touch with us. I guess on that, what I'd like to say to the committee, as you know, the committee was structured such that it's at the call of the chair, but frankly, because of the number of issues, I would like to see us be a bit more routine, at least once a week. And we've checked with you, Marjorie, our very able administrator. Why don't you brief us on what you found out as you talked to everyone?
Well, Chair Duncan, it looks like Tuesday or Thursday from 1 to 3 would be the best time for the committee to meet. However, if we choose a single day, probably Thursday would be the better day. So if the committee agrees to that, we can certainly set that up and have
Does that work with your schedule, Scrooge? Jason, is
I will need to check.
Yeah. And okay. I've checked with all of your staff, and you know, there are some staff, Tuesday's better, but we can do Thursday. Thursday's better, we could do Tuesday, so on and so forth. But looks like there are a couple members where Thursday is definitely a better day.
Why don't we right now make the decision, let's go with next Thursday, 1 to 3, if you set that time aside. I would hope everyone would have a chance to really review this particular book. We've asked the director from the Oregon Progress Board to join us. He has been looking, and their staff, they've been looking at the whole area of technology as it relates to various agencies and areas of concern within the state, and he'd like to bring that information to us. I believe we have them. Do we have them scheduled yet?
We'll certainly schedule them as soon as possible.
Okay, we'll try to get them scheduled right away. I'm anxious to hear from each of you if various are concerned. Is there something, for example, Senator Atkinson, that we could be moving along that would be helpful to you down the road? And say,
faster.
Pardon? Okay, but those are the things that, and I might like to spend a little time with each one of you too before that time. And we are not, so many committees, you get bogged down, you have so many bills before you, just have to deal with that. You can't stop and think about the policy issues, and we do have that advantage of dealing with policy. Senator Courtney has some ideas he's talked to me about, and I think it fits in with what we've been hearing today from the standpoint of education. He's saying if you think about the generations, it's the current generation that really has trouble with a lot of this, the whole technology kind of concern. The younger generation really is growing up in that kind of environment, and they deal with it. You know, my six-year-old granddaughter gets very upset with me as I try to get my VCR working, because she can handle it without a bit of trouble. I think, and I'll let him explain it in more detail later, but I think he has an idea of maybe bringing some youth in to kind of get some feeling from them. Am I capturing it, Senator? We might, it be an opportunity for them to be involved, and it's amazing what we might learn from having them involved. And several ideas, maybe we can be using some of the network situations we have throughout the state right now and really make it a statewide kind of involvement. So we'll look forward to hearing from Senator. And I believe you have something you want to share with the committee today, too, Senator.
Mr. Chair, I just, I guess if you get U.S. News World Report there, July 15, 2001, they have an article called Overwhelmed by Tech. I was taken by the article because it gets into the handheld Palm Pilot, the desktop PC, the laptop, the cell phones, the pagers, the digital cameras, and the remote controls. The essence of the article speaks to about Peter Courtney. I don't know how many Peter Courtneys out there, but the overwhelm, and I don't know how academic or scientific research this is, but apparently the market is struggling now because this some generation is screaming for simplicity, that they have reached the point that they're overwhelmed. They even talk about Jeff Hawkins, who I guess was the originator of the Palm Pilot, how he's thrown his hands up now when he goes out the shop, that he's unable to take all the remote controls for his VCR, his digital camera, and his TV and coordinate them and things. And I found it a fascinating article because it says here, and Mr. Johnson's not going to be happy with me, one of the quotes, our products are engineered by engineers for the sake of engineering. This is Jeff Hawkins speaking, he says, as opposed to for the sake of the person at the end. That it's a very interesting situation in terms of engineers and their role in this whole thing. But it would be interesting when I talk about the younger generation. I'm talking about elementary school age kids, middle school age kids, and high school age kids going to college, as to how they view this whole world versus those of us at this age group, because I have found it remarkable that my three sons, who are 18 and a half, 15, and 13, they look at this stuff much different than people in my age group, or even younger. And I would love to get those kids in here or get them out there on the internet some way where we bring them in some way just to figure out where their minds are going, what they think. I think it would be fascinating. I just think it's like a foreign language. They grew up with it. A lot of us have just started to learn it. So this article I find fascinating. I don't know if it helps us at all. The market had better pay attention to this if it's true, because products aren't selling because people are overwhelmed by the lack of simplicity, and that may mean, well, it'll go away as the younger people get up there because they can handle the complexities. I don't know, but and I don't know how reputable you think the article is. I just made a copy. Maybe you've already read the article, but it has some very dramatic statements about what's happening to society in terms of what they're purchasing and not, and their frustrations in this whole area. So I just thought, since it was just last week, it might be a timely thing to distribute. And
I had a bit of a reality check, too. I was trying to bring something back to the Capitol, and Bud, who's our technology person, and there's a little wire or something I need, and so I've been going through everything I have at home. And, you know, trying to keep track of all of the various cords you have and what plugs into what is just absolutely overwhelming. And maybe an engineer's got to go for the color coding system so you know what fits what. I couldn't believe how many I have around my house, and I could. By the way, I did not find the one he wanted.
That's true.
Yes.
Well, one thing I would say too, Mr. Chair, regarding not only some of the things in this report, but also things that dovetail with this report, I think I mentioned once before that I think myself excluded, the rest of the committee is a remarkable representation of the Senate. I think this is a great committee, and with Senator Nelson and my three esteemed colleagues here who I think would do very, very well on some of these very, very important issues. And there are other issues out there that talk about some of the things in this report that I think would do very, very well for this committee to consider, and would certainly you know, ask the chair to kind of keep an eye out with along with the Senator Nelson on some of those bills that may deal with some of these issues, so that this committee would have the opportunity to weigh in and share the expertise that we have on this committee with this, because as Mr. Johnson and others have pointed out, there's some very important things here, and there are some things we can do to really start moving this. And as Senator Atkinson was saying, this is our economy, is our education. It all dovetails together, and there are some ideas floating out there right now, you know, that are on the president's decks, not from me, but others that I think you know, moving forward is very, very important for us.
We did have an opportunity to talk to the majority leader last week. Marjorie and I meet with him once a week, and we talked about that very thing, about, you know, trying to get bills that deal with the technology filtered this way so that we don't get mixed up too much.
I have one other comment, Mr. Chair,
yes.
And this is a frustration that Senator Courtney was discussing, and that is in the setup of our office. I have a laptop. It is, and Bud is our IS guy, has been overwhelmed by 90 of us with entirely different needs, and he's done a masterful job, and I am sort of online now, which is great. I'm online enough to answer my email.
I'm not, and I'm senior to you here. I don't know how that happens. I'll talk to Bud.
Here's a real-world application for us that I would be curious to talk to Bud about. Here's a great first place to start. We all sit in these chairs that have been here for 30 years. We have orange carpet and purple couches. And I think we have some IS pieces that are dated that nobody else, I have never found anybody in business that still uses. When you send an email to me, my friends who send me emails, I say do not send it to the state, because I don't believe we can handle it properly. We have a technology infrastructure in this building, my analogy is, and I'd love to ask Bud, that's probably as fashionable as the orange carpet in the Senate offices. I mean, in all seriousness, we can't exactly expect us to be ready as a state, if we're maybe not even ready as a capital, to handle some technology. I wonder, I'd love to have Bud in this committee and ask him, are we ready to go at full speed?
We may have Bud come join us one of these days. It's a good point. It's a very good point. Well, we do have, by the way, we're very fortunate to have Marjorie Taylor as our staff administrator, and Andrew Morris. We've had a chance to work with Andrew before, so looking forward to having you here too, Andrew. At this point, I think we will adjourn the meeting, and we'll look forward to visiting with you again.